Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. This week will mark the first anniversary of the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, in which a counter-protester, Heather Heyer, was murdered by a man who drove his car into her. With uncertainty about how much of a repeat event is planned, the mayor of Charlottesville has announced that parks and other public facilities will be closed this coming weekend, and it's not just Charlottesville where white nationalists feel empowered. Last week, we talked about the group called Identity Europa that held a rally in Fort Tryon Park, right in Upper Manhattan, and has also held events in Westchester. Over this weekend in Portland, Oregon, there was the third demonstration in the last 5 weeks by groups that draw white supremacists into the streets. There were some violent clashes with counter-protesters. Here's a few seconds from the beginning of Saturday evening's newscast on Portland's KGW-TV.
The original event was pegged as a freedom march and a campaign event for conservative Senate candidate in Washington and Patriot Prayer leader Joey Gibson, a candidate who said on Facebook, supporters should bring guns.
That from KGW-TV in Portland. The Southern Poverty Law Center has named one of the groups involved, the Proud Boys, a hate group because of its members' ties to the racist right, their rhetoric denigrating Muslims and women, and the group's affiliation with events featuring right-wing extremists. So that was Portland, Oregon. Supposedly peaceful, hippie Portlandia is having a long, hot summer. Now, maybe none of this should be surprising when the President of the United States keeps using racist dog whistles and language more explicit than dog whistles as he campaigns for Republican candidates and tries to stiffen his base with the Mueller investigation coming closer to its conclusions. One pattern on display in the last few days, maybe you've heard this, Trump singles out black political opponents with a classic racist slur of saying they are not smart or have low IQs. This is not new, but he's done it a few times just in the last few days. Here he is at Saturday night's rally for the Republican congressional candidate in tomorrow's special election in Ohio. He talks about the supposed blue wave coming in this election year, and listen to where he takes it.
They're talking about this blue wave. I don't think so. I don't think so. Maxine Waters is leading the charge. Maxine. She's a real beauty. Maxine. A seriously low IQ person.
So what does Maxine Waters even have to do with the Ohio election? Well, it doesn't matter. We know it works for the president to gin up turnout. He came back to just throw in her name periodically. Later in that event. And maybe you've heard about what he did with LeBron James this weekend. He was responding to this, LeBron James on CNN.
He's dividing us, and what I noticed over the last few months, that he's kind of used sport to kind of divide us, and that's something that I can't relate to because I know that sport was the first time I ever was around someone white, you know, and I got an opportunity to see them and learn about them, and they got an opportunity to learn about me, and we became very good friends. And I was like, oh, wow, this is all because of sports. And sports has never been something that divides people. It's always been something that brings someone together.
So LeBron, while declaring that he's glad he's gotten to know white people, criticizes Trump as divisive. And rather than try to explain why he's not divisive, Trump tweets, LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do, unquote. So no substance, just more low IQ black people, both the CNN anchor Don Lemon and LeBron James. Trump added, kind of like an eight-year-old, I like Mike, a reference to Michael Jordan. You know, people debate whether James or Jordan is the greatest NBA player of all time. Jordan is also famously apolitical, but he issued a statement saying, I support LJ. He's doing an amazing job for his community. Now, for Michael Jordan, that's political. And you know who else supported LJ? Did you hear this? First Lady Melania Trump. She issued a statement saying, it looks like LeBron James is working to do good things on behalf of our next generation. And just as that was the statement. And And just as she always has, I blew this. I'm going to read the Melania Trump statement again. It looks like LeBron James is working to do good things on behalf of our next generation. And since this came from Melania's office, it says, just as she always has, the First Lady encourages everyone to have an open dialogue about issues facing children today. As you know, Mrs. Trump has traveled the country and world talking to children about their well-being, healthy living, and the importance of responsible online behavior with her Be Best initiative. And I'd say note the shot in there about responsible online behavior. And you know, this is the latest in a string of little snubs of her husband, like I don't think we've ever seen from a first lady before, including last month when it was reported that the president was enraged. She was watching CNN on Air Force One. Maybe she was watching Don Lemon. And the first lady released a statement saying she watches whatever channel she chooses. So interesting trend, pretty eventful weekend. But then what weekend isn't anymore? With me now, two reporters from Vice News, which many of you know does a late nightly news program on HBO. Evan McMorris Santoro has been following the recent Trump rallies. Elle Reeve became well known last summer when her reporting revealed on video the true scariness of the Charlottesville rally with groups of torch-carrying white nationalists, like something out of an old Klan Days event. And this chant made that much more powerful by Elle having recorded it.
Jews will not replace us! Jews will not replace us!
Jews will not replace us, they chanted in Charlottesville. Who can forget what will happen this week on the anniversary? Evan, and I think I was saying your name wrong, is it Ellie?
Ellie.
E-L-L-E, but Ellie. Evan and Ellie, thanks for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
And Ellie, the city of Charlottesville is trying very hard to not have this anniversary become a thing. What would you say the status or the threat level is as we approach the day?
Well, Charlottesville is being aided by the organizer of the event, Jason Kessler, who is not very good at organizing at all. He has officially called off a rally in Charlottesville. He's going to hold one in D.C. the next day. But in the years since the Charlottesville rally, he's lost his constituency in the alt-right. Many, many leaders have denounced him as unreliable and bad at organizing. So it's not going to be a big thing.
Is it because he's bad at organizing, or has he been, and has the whole Charlottesville event turned people, even on the right, far right of our country, off for being too racist?
It's a combination of those things. Within the alt-right, it's seen as a failure, at least in terms of public relations. Kessler himself has feuded with many of the other leaders. He also has done things to compound the scrutiny the alt-right has faced. For example, he tweeted that Heather Heyer, who died in Charlottesville, deserved it, and then blamed that tweet on Ambien. And so he just doesn't have a constituency anymore. Chris Cantwell, the guy that I interviewed, called him an idiot and said, follow Kessler at your peril.
For people who haven't seen it, here's one soundbite from your report of a rally attendee. This is just 16 seconds.
I'm here to spread ideas, talk, in the hopes that somebody more capable will come along and do that. Somebody like Donald Trump, who does not give his daughter to a Jew.
So Donald Trump, but like more racist.
A lot more racist than Donald Trump.
Do you want to put that in context for us a year later?
A year later, I would say that after Charlottesville, Donald Trump managed to surpass the expectations of the alt-right. They don't think that he believes in eugenics. They don't think he's a Nazi. But they think he has some affection for what they believe. And afterwards, when he said there were good people on both sides, they were thrilled. They took that as a sign that, you know, he thought what they believed was not so bad. Since then, you know, they haven't seen a wall. They haven't seen a great reduction in immigration. So there's some disenchantment with the president.
They've seen a lot of rhetoric, though.
Yes, they like that. But they're also quite sophisticated. They read mainstream press. They read liberal journals. They understand that their association with Trump is toxic for Trump and the Republican Party. And so they want to avoid that.
You know, before we bring in your colleague, Evan, we talk so much these days about the downsides of social media. Your video exposing that rally for what it was has been seen millions of times, much more than if it had just run on TV in the old-fashioned sense. What impact do you think you had with your reporting last year that got more inside than the traditional networks did?
Well, I worked with a massive team who worked 24 hours to put that out. And that was very important because it happened right after the event, so people could see it when it was fresh. The other thing that was very important about it was that it showed that these guys were not Confederate history buffs. They were not there just because they cared about the Robert E. Lee statue. They were there to make an explicit white supremacist case. And they were shouting, Jews will not replace us. Not you will not replace us. That Jews will not replace us as a reference to a conspiracy that Jewish people are trying to repress the white population in order to control it.
Ellie Reeve and Evan McMorris Santoro from Vice News with us here on WNYC. Evan, you've been watching the recent run of Donald Trump rallies for Vice. The president is allowed to hold rallies. He's allowed to stump for Republican candidates. So what have you been watching for or finding newsworthy?
Well, I've been to a bunch of his rallies since he became president and a bunch of them before he was president. And lately, the change has been really that what hasn't changed. That, frankly, the president, since he became the president, has sounded exactly the same as rallies as he has before. You played the sound of Maxine Waters, the Maxine Waters attacks. We talk about, you know, how he now talks about the media all the time, you know, screams about CNN, screams about other media outlets. What's interesting is that actually the rallies when he was president and not president are basically exactly the same. But in the recent days, what's been most interesting has been that his constituents have come along with him on his new attacking his new enemies list. He used to attack Hillary all the time. Obviously, he was running for president. We all heard that, the lock her up and all that. Now he attacks the media with sort of the same level of rhetoric. And his constituents have come along on that, too. We talk about this sort of new conspiracy theory that people are talking about called QAnon, which is, you know, a very complicated sort of online conspiracy thing that basically boils down to the media is untrustworthy and is covering up some, like, massive crimes and, like, massive success that the president is having. And so you're seeing constituents that before would talk to you about Hillary Clinton needing to go to jail and how dangerous she was and the Democratic Party is, are now talking about the media in similar ways. And that's kind of what he's good at with these rallies, is that he creates a villain, he foments support for that villain among his faithful, and they go along with him towards that villain.
Evan, I watched the Ohio rally on TV Saturday night. That's how exciting my weekend was. And it looked to me like he pulled back a little from his Tampa ferocity against the press a few days earlier. He still taunted them, but a little more with a wry smile after the crowd had seemed to threaten to turn violent or close to it in Tampa. Did you get that impression?
Well, I have to push back on the sort of threaten to turn violent. I mean, there was some imagery. I mean, I was standing next to the famous Trump villain, Jim Acosta, at the Tampa rally. And
CNN
there was definitely,
White House reporter. Uh-huh.
Correct. And there's definitely some angry people there. But it's more, what's more important, I think, for listeners to understand is that it's a party atmosphere at these things. These Trump rallies are people having a grand old time. I mean, they play music very, very loud. Sort of like classic rock station music is blasted at full volume. Everybody sort of is dancing and hanging out. Then they turn, do the like boo, you know, yell at the media thing. Then they turn and they do other chants. It's really more of like a sort of, it's festive. I mean, it's not a great place to be a reporter. They're not huge fans of us, mm-hmm. but I did not ever feel like physically threatened at a Trump rally. I know other people have. I'm also like a large, tall white man, so like it's not exactly the most dangerous place for me. Mm. And I know that other people have felt differently. But in the case of the press stuff, yeah, the president didn't say the exact same things he said on the Tampa stage, but he did use his other methods of communicating with his faithful, Twitter and other things, to talk about the press as being dangerous and starting wars. You know, the fake press starting wars and enemy of the people and all that sort of stuff. So I do think that maybe he was a little bit different in the exact words that he used between Tampa and Ohio. But in essence, this is the villain that he is choosing to focus on for the 2018 election. You know, before it was Hillary, and now it is the media. And he does a very good job of continuing to pummel the media to the point that he has just discounted his credibility to a huge degree with people who come to his rallies. Yeah. And, you know, how important they are to the election is unclear, but the people who get up, stand in line, and go to a Trump rally have an extremely low opinion of the media to the point that they don't believe anything that even a reporter like I might tell them to their face, something that I've seen in my own two eyes, they won't believe you.
You know,
that's the purpose of this media attack, and that's what happened.
I want to ask you about this weird thing. At least it's new in mainstream media attention over the last week. The conspiracy theory group that you mentioned called QAnon. You interviewed a QAnon couple for Vice after Trump seemed to wave at them at his rally in Tampa the other day. I'll play a clip from that. But can you set this up for us? For people who don't spend their days on 4chan or Reddit, I think you've called QAnon something like Pizzagate on bath salts.
Yeah, I can't take credit for that line. That was my colleagues at Vice Magazine. But essentially what it is that there is a group of people who believe that there is a senior government official with so-called Q-level security clearance who posts little messages to message boards that are sort of similar to what you might hear like Deep Throat say to Woodward and Bernstein in the movie All the President's Men. Little sort of like riddle kind of things that they believe are pointing towards the real story that's going on. And that real story for some of them involves a very high-level sex trafficking ring among sort of senior Democrats and the Hollywood elite, and that the president of the United States and his team are secretly prosecuting these people in secret behind the scenes, because if they did it in public, it would be so disruptive that it might cause like actual violence to happen is what they believe.
Do I have it right?
The contours of it.
Yeah. Do I have it right that it goes so far as they believe Trump is actually in on the Mueller investigation and they're secretly working together to break up this alleged predatory child sex ring that involves George Soros and other powerful people and government officials?
Brian, that's exactly right. That's what that is sort of the basis of it, is that the idea that the Mueller investigation is a smokescreen to cover secret prosecutions of Democrats and Hollywood elite liberals in this sex trafficking ring. That is absolutely right. But you know, the sort of central aspect of it, though, I mean, they believe different things, but the central aspect of it is that the media is not telling the story of the Trump presidency, is not telling what's going on, and is hiding and covering things up on behalf of these powerful liberals. And that this Q person or group of persons, depending on who you talk to, is presenting sort of the alternative facts or the actual facts. Like the actual truth of what's going on in the Trump administration is coming through this message board. That's essentially the idea.
So listeners, any members of QAnon listening right now, we would love to hear your take on the world and on President Trump. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Anyone with a question or a thought about Q or the Trump rallies or his use of racist and sexist language to build enthusiasm or the relationship to it coming out so publicly in Charlottesville and Portland and Washington Heights from these groups, and anyone else with anything else related for our two guests, Evan McMorris Santoro and Ellie Reeve from Vice News, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. And let's take a phone call that I guess is for Ellie right away. John calling from Charlottesville. John, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, Brian. Longtime listener, first time caller.
Glad you're on.
Shout out to Brother Peter in Brooklyn, New York. But anyways, I'm in Charlottesville, and there's been some chatter about how they're going to usurp the rules. And so some people are talking about how they're going to get up in sort of groups of 49, and I guess the limit is 50 as to who can meet together in one place. But that's kind of been the local chatter, and I wondered if that had been a strategy that you know, had been employed elsewhere in the United States, and what else your speakers had to say on that.
Thank you very much, John. And for those just joining us, he's referring to this weekend's one-year anniversary of the Charlottesville white supremacist rally and questions about what's going to happen on the anniversary weekend. Ellie, how would you answer his question?
So where that idea comes from is that Charlottesville denied Jason Kessler a permit to hold an anniversary rally, citing the violence and chaos of last year. Kessler asked for a federal injunction to allow to be able to have that permit. Then at the hearing, which was about 2 weeks ago, he showed up 45 minutes late. His lawyers didn't know where he was, and after some conferencing, decided to withdraw his request for an injunction. He gave up. But during the hearing, the lawyer, while waiting for Kessler to arrive, mentioned that you don't need a permit to have less than 50 protesters in Charlottesville. And so that's where that idea comes from. And it's possible that Kessler could do that. I just think it's very unlikely. He just does not have a constituency in the alt-right right now.
And let's take another call. Can I go to Derek on the Upper West Side? Derek, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Very quickly, could your guest please explain what the Anon part of QAnon means? Everybody on every media channel I've observed explained the Q part. Nobody explained what Anon is supposed to mean, and I was disturbed because my immediate thought was the former, I don't know if the right title is, president of the UN was Kofi Annan about, I think, 16 years ago from Ghana. So what's Anon supposed to mean in QAnon?
Evan?
So the best thing about being on radio in New York is someone's going to call up and ask if the Anon is Kofi Annan. It's just the best question I've gotten in so long. No, in this case, it is A-N-O-N, like anonymous. And the idea is that there is the Q, which is either the group of people or the single person, and then the A-N-O-N, the anonymous, are the people who are also part of the movement that are... What happens is they believe that they're sort of news researchers. They get little nuggets from Q, what they call crumbs, and then they go out there and they sort of do their own internet sleuthing and prove those things, connect dots, and create a kind of infrastructure of information that tells the tale that they want told. The mechanics of it are interesting if you are not that equated with internet conspiracy, but they're not particularly, I think, insightful in terms of what this is actually about. What this is actually about are people who are that Trump faithful who expected things to change very rapidly under Trump and have had to live with a lot of media coverage that has been very critical of this president for obvious reasons. And so they will seize upon moments when the press has made mistakes, which have happened, some of them embarrassing, some of them sort of less embarrassing, and they'll seize on the president telling them that, like, things are actually going better than you're hearing. And then that sort of leads them to a conclusion that this person on the internet is telling them that actually major, massive anti-corruption efforts, huge changes to the way the country works, are being done in the secret. So while it's not Kofi Annan, although I kind of wish that it was, that's awesome, it is more about just this idea that there's no one to trust in the mainstream, that Trump is the person you can trust, and that the world of Trump support involves sort of being in a secret group of people who know what's really going on, and that is what this whole thing is about. And so I think that sometimes when we cover it, we get very invested in the details of how it works, and what message boards they go on and things like that. But when I talk to people, they would talk to me about the system. They feel like the system of the country wasn't working for them. And they have that desperation that a lot of Trump supporters already had. And then they also talk about, like, well, look about how you guys lied about this press mistake, or this was wrong. So I just don't believe anything anymore. And I know in my bones that Trump is the best president we've ever had, and that he's doing all these things that he promised. And so I'm finding a way to believe that. And that's what QAnon really is.
So at the Tampa rally, there was this couple with a guy holding a letter Q cutout who people say Trump waved at, and you spoke to them afterwards. Here's a minute of it. Here we go.
So the president points at you. How quickly after that did you know that, like, this had become a big deal?
I was driving home, and he jumped on his iPad.
Yes, I always go to the Great Awakening on Reddit. It's like my site for the Q. And somebody said to the guy with the Q cutout, Q's looking for you. And I guess Q did post while we were there. Trump pointed you out purposely. We had no clue. And then everybody's like, Q and half the world's looking for you. It's confirmed.
Yeah.
What's confirmed?
Confirmed that it's Trump. It's not him, but it's the Q team.
It's the Q team. So tell us about that couple.
So those are the Buteaus. They are a couple from Ocala, Florida, just down the road in from Tampa. And they drove out with their son. And, you know, they're both sort of decked out in Q T-shirts. When you go to a Trump rally now, you see just the letter Q everywhere. It's kind of like a strange Sesame Street sketch or something. Because there's like just Qs everywhere. People have people. It's on T-shirts. It's on bumper stickers. It's on flags. It's on hats. It's all over the place. And they went there with a homemade sign that was a Q cut out of wood that was painted bright colors. And they stood in the front of this front rally, in front of this Trump rally, and they waved their sign with their son. And the perception among the community was that the president pointed at them and waved at them, which was taken to be a sort of a tacit acknowledgement that the president is aware of this Trump, of this Q thing, and was telling them to sort of keep going with what they're doing. And then you heard the couple felt like they had heard that Q wanted them to be there, and Q wanted, you know, that they were being singled out by Q as somebody. And it created like a big stir for them among the Q faithful. I mean, their pictures are all over the place on the message boards, and they got a bunch of phone calls and a bunch of emails. And when we reached out to them to ask them to be interviewed, they went on the Q boards and they talked about, should we talk to Vice? What's that going to be like? Yada, yada. And, you know, there was a big discussion about what kind of interview might happen and what might go down. But the basic idea was that, yes, they should go on because they need to tell the message of Q to the broader public. And they have this platform now and they should use it.
Evan McMorris Santoro and Ellie Reeve from Vice News on HBO as they cover Trump rallies and Charlottesville, respectively. And Linda and Randolph, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good. Listen, I just want to say we should really be afraid of all of the insightfulness of violence. Traveling to work and traveling back home, straight there, straight back, three occasions, maybe four, white males get next to my car. I don't have tinted windows. I'm Hispanic descent. They get next to my car. They say, F you. And then the other day, my son and I were driving to work, minding our own business. A car gets in front of us, throws trash out their passenger window, tries to run us off the road. You know, inciting violence in the United States of America, really?
And they did everything but chant, build that wall into your car window, right?
Exactly. And you know what? My son's a third-generation American. I'm from the United States of America. My brother fought in the Vietnam War. He fought for this country. We are just as American as they are. Actually, they're more American than our president is because they've been here more generations mm-hmm. than he has. He's second, maybe first generation American. We're third generation Americans.
Linda, I hear you. Thank you very much for calling in. And really, we've been talking about this kind of thing ever since Trump was elected. People feeling licensed to do the kind of thing that Linda was just describing. And Ellie, I know you're not a Washington political reporter, but one of the frustrating and horrifying things for a lot of people is that the president doesn't explicitly denounce it.
That's right. There's a sense that he's sort of given people license to express their baser instincts. I mean, it just to be cruel in public to their fellow Americans. It's not just the alt-right that has felt emboldened by the president. It's regular people who maybe have regular jobs, but they have racial biases and they want to express them.
And since you've been covering Charlottesville and other far-right rallies, how much do you think we can start to draw a line between Trump calling immigrants animals and black people low IQ and these outbursts of public far-right rallies from Charlottesville to Portland to Washington Heights?
I mean, people look to their leaders for guidance on how to behave. Absolutely, the alt-right was emboldened by Trump's election. The campaign was something that they felt momentum in. They felt they had a way to influence it because they were able to manipulate reporters on social media. I mean, these people are not, you know, crazy country bumpkins from the South. I'm from the South, okay, so I can say that. They're sophisticated. They understand what's going on, and they're very socially sophisticated. They know how to manipulate people.
And I see the Republican gubernatorial candidate in Virginia, the state that includes Charlottesville, there's an article in the New York Times today, is running hard on Confederate heritage and has ties to some of the Charlottesville hardcore. Have you looked into that at all as you've been reporting down there?
Yes, I've talked to some alt-right leaders who
I said gubernatorial candidate. It's the Senate candidate running against the incumbent Tim Kaine.
He also tried to run for a governor and failed. So the sense that I get from alt-right leaders I've spoken to is they think that Corey Stewart and other candidates like him are inspired by the alt-right, even if they're not totally within that organization. Stewart called himself edgy in a New York Times article, which is a term that the alt-right uses to mean racist. He has been photographed with Kessler, although before Charlottesville, and he has some ties to this organization called League of the South.
And Evan, the New York Times also has an article today saying since Trump is a turnout generator, the Republican Party's strategy for holding Congress in the midterm elections is, as much as anything else, to run on division, much more than any policy item, embracing Trump and the divisiveness that he generates. Is it looking like that to you as you cover these rallies and the congressional races that these rallies are pegged to?
Well, the three rallies this week were expressly political rallies designed to boost the fortunes of Republican candidates running for Senate or Congress. Before the president speaks, local congressional candidates get up and they speak. Senate candidates get up and they speak. In some cases, the president calls them on stage with him to talk about the midterm elections. This is the goal of what these rallies are. These are sort of traditional president stumping for candidate rallies, except they do have this twist, which is that basically, if you're at one of these rallies, it is a Trump rally. It is not a Republican rally. It is the president says, if you want to do more of what I'm doing, if you like what I'm doing, if you want more support for my policies and my ideas, you've got to vote for this person. And so you do see, you know, what's fascinating about it as somebody who does cover the midterms is, you know, when it comes to the midterm elections, you have a president who has some of the highest support ever seen among members of his own party. That's the president of the United States. That's Trump. He is like 88%, according to some polls, which is the highest we've seen for any president among his own party since like Bush after the September 11th attacks. And then you have the other side, which is that he has some of the lowest support ever seen overall for a president at this time in his first term ever. So when it comes to figuring out how they're going to play the midterm elections, they appear to be going towards the 88 and less towards the 45. They're not making efforts for the most part to talk about, look, Trump is the president, but I'm a different person. I'm going to do what I want to do. You know, there's things that you should support me for because I'll check the president on. No, you go to a giant pep rally for the president and you stand there and you say, this is a great president. I'm going to be one of his allies. I'm going to be like him. And the hope is that base that turned out in ways that surprised a lot of people in 2016 is going to come out again and sort of stave off the historic trends that suggest a good election for Democrats and also the poll numbers for the president that suggest a very good election for Democrats. I wanted to go back really quick to something that you guys just talked about.
And, Evan, we've just got 30 seconds left, so real concise.
Okay, just the race stuff that Ellie was mentioning. Every person I talk to at these Trump rallies sort of has a certain animus towards what they feel like is that political correctness that they talk about, which was, they feel upset about how they're being treated as white people. So even though it's not sort of alt-right level, it is sort of a standard lament among the Trump supporters I spoke to over the past few days.
Evan McMorris Santoro has been following the recent Trump rallies. Ellie Reeve became well-known last summer when her reporting revealed on video the true scariness of the Charlottesville rally. They are both correspondents for Vice News, which you can see online or on HBO. Thank you so much for coming in and coming on.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.